Hi, this is Arnie Arneson, and this is the Monday edition of The Attitude with Arnie Arneson. Our producers, Dave Scott and Stephanie Collins. You know the drill, we're recording on Friday morning. We also refer to Monday as our Rethink the Week. We begin our Rethink the Week with a political limerick by Skip Tenzer. And here is Skip's limerick. In their homes, garages, and a Florida estate, it seems like they all kept top secrets of the state. Trump and Pence and Biden. For all we know, Ron Wyden. Maybe in my own basement, I have 7 or 8. Joining us right now for our Rethink the Week panel is our great group of talkers. Rick Newman is a former New Hampshire State Representative and Portsmouth City Councilor. He has over 41 years of experience in New Hampshire state government. He is an established figure lobbying on behalf of both local and national companies. Let me welcome Rick back to the program. Thank you, Mr. Newman.
Nice to be here, Arnie.
We have Bill Scherr. He's an American pundit and liberal political analyst. He's a contributing editor at Politico, a contributor to the Washington Monthly, Real Clear Politics. He also hosts The DMZ, an online TV show and conservative pundit with Matt Lewis on YouTube. He is an alumnus of Oberlin College. That was one of the colleges my parents would not let me go to. Literally, I swear to God.
My son is a senior at Oberlin.
Oh, there you go.
Excellent.
Well, my parents went through this list. You can't go to Reed. You can't go to Oberlin. You can't go to Carleton.
Would they have let you go to UC Santa Cruz?
Oh, I'm sure not. So this is, and then I'll get to you, Lincoln, but this is really funny. So I really wanted to go to Carleton, but my parents wouldn't let me. So that explains why I went to St. Olaf, because St. Olaf was in the same town as Carleton. And I ended up taking a number of courses at Carleton, and I actually worked a place called Dino's. It was a submarine sandwich place that was controlled and owned by the Carleton students. So I just sort of assimilated to Carleton, even though I went to St. Olaf. Joining us also, as I'll shut up now, is Lincoln Mitchell. He teaches in the School of International Public Affairs at Columbia University. He covers the politics of New York City and San Francisco, as well as international politics. He's the author of 7 books and a frequent contributor to CNN Opinion, the San Francisco Examiner, and Brussels Morning. Welcome back to the program, Lincoln.
Thank you for having me.
Today is Holocaust Remembrance Day because we're taping on Friday morning, and I noticed that Morning Joe is actually, is he in Auschwitz? Where did he go? I know he went somewhere with the first Mr. Second of the vice president's husband. But I wanted to talk about Holocaust Remembrance Day for a couple of reasons. In part because the tagline, and Lincoln, I'm going to go to you because we talk a lot about these issues. The tagline on Holocaust Remembrance Day is never forget. Okay. And that means that we don't have to talk about it only on Friday. We can talk about it every day of the week. And as I was thinking about that line, never forget, about Holocaust Remembrance Day, you will forgive me, but I decided that the tagline under African American Studies should be never forget. Because in some ways, that's exactly what the goal is of what people like what Ron DeSantis is doing. It's what they're doing with book banning. It's what they're doing with their attack on African American Studies. It's what their attack on critical race theory. And I even have to ask the question, you know, how much could you teach about the Holocaust, right? How much could you teach about the Japanese internment camps? Like, what are you permitted to teach? And the problem is, when you ask the question, you know who the gatekeeper is. And that is my problem. So on Holocaust Remembrance Day, I want to expand not only what we remember, but what we are now being dictated to as to what is permissible to remember and what is not. Lincoln.
Well, that's a light topic on which to start. I wanted to say, today is Holocaust Remembrance Day, but it's something else. There's a reason why it's today. January, what are we? The 27th is not picked out of the blue. This is the day the Red Army liberated Auschwitz. So there is an actual historical reason for this. And I raise that for a reason, because there is a proper response to fascism and Nazism. And the Red Army and the United States military and the Allied forces understood what that response was, right? We were not going to write opinion pieces to liberate the Jews in Auschwitz. We were not going to bring down the Nazi regimes with satire and clever radio programs at the time. So I wanted to say that to your question, this point about never forget is extremely important, because I think of myself, you know, what if I were not allowed to study the Holocaust in school, right? Well, on the one hand, when I was either junior or senior in high school, I took a class on literature of the Holocaust with a Jewish teacher. And it was an extraordinary class that I still think of and still have the books and all of that. But if I had not been allowed to study the Holocaust in school, I still would have known a lot about it. And the reason is everyone in my community, my community was actually a bunch of Catholics on the streets of San Francisco, but in my family, everyone knew about it, right? If you're my generation, you knew people with yes. the numbers on their arms. Right. You knew people who had escaped. And if they escaped, they had a miraculous story, because only people, that's what it took to survive. So people are going to remember no matter what, right? But as time goes by, that gets more difficult. Yes. And as the state tells you what you can and can't remember, that gets to be a challenge. I know what the Holocaust is. Most Americans under 25 have a vague understanding of it, right? There was a legislature legislator, and I forget what state last, and my mother and I now joke about this, referring to the Holocaust and how terrible it was, says tens of thousands of Jews were murdered in the Holocaust. That's a mistake by an order of 100 to 1 that she got it wrong. And of course, what DeSantis is doing, because I know this is really central here, and it's important to understand this, this is an act of white supremacy and anti-Black racism. And it is an act that the entire Republican Party at the least seems to be going along with, and at most seems to be going along with enthusiastically. And yet we are in a political environment where if you say the Republican Party is a racist institution, you get called, you know, a fanatic and you're being uncivil and you're stirring up trouble. But what DeSantis is doing is trying to erase people's history from events that didn't start in the 1930s, but in the 1600s, a long time ago. No one's around to tell those stories now.
I'm so glad that you sort of expanded on this conversation. So, Rick, we're taping on Friday morning. On Saturday, Donald Trump is coming to address the New Hampshire GOP annual meeting. It's his first venture. And of course, as everyone knows, whether the Democrats keep New Hampshire as their first in the nation presidential primary, guess who is going to keep their first in the nation presidential primary? It's going to be the GOP, and that's going to be New Hampshire. So not only is New Hampshire going to be a place where Donald is coming to speak, but it turns out that Ron DeSantis, while he may not be there, is going to have people there at the event collecting signatures and names with the idea that there's got to be an alternative to Don. Okay. Here's what I would love for people to do. I would love for people to be outside, and I was telling my Democratic friends that what they should be wearing is orange jumpsuits and asking Donald Trump what his size is. And then the second thing I wanted them to do was to do this. I just got this from the Heritage Foundation. I actually belong to a listserv from the Heritage Foundation. I think they have an article called The Daily Signal. I think that's what it's called. And The Daily Signal this morning put this out. Chinese Communist Party targets American kids by infiltrating K through 12 schools. Okay, that's the headline. So I said we should actually change it. Change Chinese Communist to Ron DeSantis' GOP, because they are infiltrating K through 12 education. They're infiltrating higher education. That's what this is. This isn't just denying people access to information. They are infiltrating and deciding what books to read, what curriculum to do, and they're deciding what is acceptable and what is not. So as the Heritage Foundation wants to have us all look at the Chinese Communist Party, I think it's time that we actually recognize what DeSantis and the GOP and the vouchers and all this other stuff is. It is about undermining public education, because the goal is to basically spread their fascism and make it more acceptable. Rick?
Well, I totally agree, and I agree with Lincoln's comments about the generational divide of people who never forget. I mean, people under 25 have a vague understanding of the Holocaust. 20 years from now, people under 25 may very well have no understanding of it. I went to Portsmouth, New Hampshire High School. I never learned anything about the Tulsa riots at Portsmouth, New Hampshire High School, despite the fact that even though it was in New Hampshire, because we had Pease Air Force Base, we had a very significant African-American population in our high school. We, about 40% of the students were African-American. I didn't learn about the Tulsa riots till well after high school. It was never taught. So this is how you did exactly right, that if you are trying to, this is what America has always accused other countries, authoritarian countries, of doing, right? Brainwashing their population to believe that, you know, we want to eat their children, or we are the devil. And that's exactly what these people, I think Lincoln has said this in the past about other issues, but it really fits. It's the Mitch McConnell idea, the theory of the long game. You play the long game. So start affecting the changing history in kindergarten and first and second and fifth and eighth grade. And in 30 years, the history that people believe will be the history you want them to believe, not what really happened.
So, Bill, there's so much to respond to about this, but I did a radio show. I do a commercial radio station every Friday morning. I've been doing it for 22 years. Okay. This is the former Rush Limbaugh station, you know, Michael Savage station. So, you know, I'm the token liberal that they have on. Some guy was, you know, and I was talking about what Ron DeSantis is doing. I was talking about vouchers. I was talking about the attack on public education and that the goal isn't to support choice. The goal is to destroy public education. Mm-hmm. And I said, so some guy calls in and says to me, but Arnie, there's a reason you want to leave public education. Look at the drugs in public schools. Look at the weapons in public schools. And he goes on and on and on. I said, and that's that is the fault of public education, the drugs in schools, or it is the fault of us? The guns in schools, or is that the fault of us? The failure to bring about the best of education, is that their fault, or is that the fault of us? I mean, again, it was so interesting, as if somehow the rationale for vouchers and the war on public education is there has to be a better alternative because we have basically set public schools up to fail. You know, I mean, it makes me crazy. And then you look at what Ron DeSantis is doing, and by definition, public schools will be a place of failure because he's going to define what education looks like.
Well, you know, DeSantis is an interesting force in the Republican Party because he's doing a number of things that are different than the privatizing force of the GOP, which we've seen for several decades. He's trying to use government power to change public institutions and private. You know, he attacks Disney, for example, because Disney had the temerity to have a public criticism of a law he supported about what was going on in the public schools. And when he says, we're going to fight the woke everywhere, we're going to fight the woke in our schools, in our universities, in our corporations, he expands it explicitly. The optimistic interpretation of that dynamic is that he and other Republicans are acting that way because they're losing. It is an act of desperation because, you know, Rick just mentioned the Tulsa riots. Nobody learned the Tulsa riots. It's that unique to Portsmouth.
Right.
That was memory hold for decades. And it's only been resurrected very, very recently because we're going through a public process where we are re-examining American history and remembering things that have been forgotten. And that's happening in a lot of school systems, elementary, high school, college. And there are certain folks on the far right that are very threatened by that. And DeSantis is voicing that fear. I don't necessarily think it's at all a given that he is speaking for a majority of the country when he does that. So the challenge to fight it, you know, is to connect people to commonality, to remember that we're to focus on what unites us, that we've all been oppressed in one way or another. And if we don't turn against each other and stick together, we can isolate those who are trying to be forces of division.
So Lincoln, this week, for some reason, I've been focusing on loneliness, okay? I saw an article about the Japanese and loneliness. And then I looked at Harper's Index of this month, and Harper's Index has 5 or 6 statistics about loneliness, okay? And as I'm listening to Bill talk about the commonality, what we can find in community, in a lot of ways, I think the Republicans will be wildly successful. And the reason they're going to be wildly successful is that they're going to ensure that we stay in our silos. They're going to ensure that we don't find places of common ground. You know, your church is no longer a place of common ground. Now your church is of one ilk. Even though you might be Protestant, it would be like two different Jesuses. You would have no idea what you were talking about. I see that there is this push to isolate us and keep us separate. That's what they're doing with public education. You go to this homeschool, you go to this private school, you go to this religious school. What was public school about? It was about community. It was about meeting people in your neighborhood, but now they're taking this away. So my fear is that, and I mentioned this maybe even last week, there was an interesting set of statistics. Finland has the best public education in the world. It turns out that guess what else Finland has? Finland has ranks number one in their residents and their citizens to be able to fight propaganda and misinformation coming out of social media. And they connect the quality of education with the ability to basically push back on this infiltration, this propaganda. And look what the goal of the Republicans is. Yes, they have the long game, but I'm just trying to figure out how do you find that common ground when what they are doing is so effectively creating moats around us. So not only do you have a difficulty of finding common ground, but you got to swim a moat to even find the person that you can agree with or even disagree with?
I don't see anything that is going to make us find common ground as a country, all 330 million of us, or even within the different groups that you're talking about. I mean, for years before 2020, as polarization, which is the media term, I'm not comfortable with that word, but we'll use it here for the sake to keep it simple, was rising. What we heard is if a crisis comes along, we'll band together. And then a crisis came along and we started yelling at each other even more loudly. So this common ground equation is a very difficult one. But I want to go back to your point about loneliness, because that is very important. Right? Loneliness, both from a mental health perspective, from a physical health perspective, from a community perspective. But there, the Republicans have the answer, have an answer, I should say, to be clear. And I'm going to go back to, I mean, as you know, some of my work on the politics and history of San Francisco, where I've had the ill fortune to spend a lot of time reading about Jim Jones, right? And cults. But this is how cults work, right? You're lonely. You're isolated. Come down this rabbit hole. Come down this rabbit hole with us. Online, follow this YouTube link, and now you're looking at Jordan Peterson, and now you're down some Q subreddit, but there's a community here, right? When I see these Donald Trump rallies, I mean, and a lot has been made about the fascistic element of it, right? What that feels like. But it also, and I know I'm both dating and regionalizing myself, it also feels like a lot of Grateful Dead shows I went to in the 1980s, right? Everyone's showing off their new tie-dye, or, you know, you're hanging out before the show, and I'm sure the things you might buy are a little different and you might consume are a little different, but it's got that kind of festival feel. You go in and you hope he plays, you know, the old favorites, you know, are we going to hear Box of Rain today? And then maybe something from the new album, Touch of Grey, and that brings people together in a community. Now, the Deadhead community was not about fascism. But there is some similarity here. And I wonder whether it's some of the same people. So the Republican answer to loneliness is come join us. Come join our cult. If you're lonely, it's the fault of the woke liberals. That's their pitch. And it works with a lot of people.
And I'm thinking about what works. So one of the things that you keep hearing, and we have to talk about the mass slaughter of this week. We have whether it was what the cops did, which was not a mass slaughter that happened in, is it Memphis? I believe it was Memphis. And then we saw what happened in California. And now we know that there are more mass shootings this month than there are days in the month. Okay. And one of the answers, Rick, that I get all the time from Republicans is mental health, mental health, mental health. Okay. That's their answer. There is an article, Bill, in your Washington Monthly, and I'm going to connect the dots. Are Republicans forgetting what Trump taught them about Social Security and Medicare? The idea is Americans like that Social Security. Americans like that Medicare. Now, the problem is with why am I referring to that when I'm referring to mental health? Because if you are going to use mental health as your excuse, where the hell do you access mental health, Rick? I'm curious. What therapist do you go to if you don't have access to healthcare? Who do you see when you're five if you don't have access to healthcare? Their excuse for the weaponization of America and the mass shootings is that people are being treated for their mental health. How do you separate mental health from our inability to provide universal health care? Because guess what? There's no way in hell that someone that can't go to a doctor when they're sick is ever going to find a therapist to deal with their mental health issues. So guess what? What does that mean? That means that we're going to abandon ourselves to mass slaughter because as if somehow guns are the only problem. There is so much in the way of our lack of social safety net. And then the Republicans want to take away what? The only safety net for old people, which is Social Security and Medicare. I mean, they don't give a crap. You're on your own, Jack. And whether it's a silo and join my, you know, my group, or whether it's basically going to say, you know, you have to succumb to whatever we give to you, which is basically nothing.
If it was solely mental health, then I guess we ought to try to figure out why most of the rest of the world doesn't seem to have the problem. That's something that's missing in their logic. But the pitch is the same. It's always find an easy solution, but you never have to do anything about it. It's really very similar to their view on abortion. We should preserve life, end abortion. But once the child is born, we really don't have any, we don't want, care or want to spend any money feeding that child or housing that child, or educating that child, or having health care for that child. They're respect for human life ends. It ends at birth. And on the issue of mass shootings, they don't have anything else to say. I mean, no. We have gotten into a place now where all of us, you miss half of the mass shootings because the media doesn't even cover them. They're not that big a news event anymore. So when you say, we know about the ones that took place recently in California, but because we're paying attention to that, we missed a couple in other parts of the country. I don't know what the answer is, but it certainly has to start with some kind of legislation that deals with the access to weapons of mass destruction that we're letting just about anybody have access to in this country.
The reason I brought up the Social Security and the Medicare, those are the, remember you just talked about community and the common ground. And here's the good news. A 65-year-old Republican and a 65-year-old Democrat, they like Social Security. A 65-year-old Republican and a 65-year-old Democrat, they like Medicare. So we now know what is a place of common ground. And that is a place of common ground. So why do we not have universal health care? Because they don't want that common ground for everybody else. Because they don't want to expand that. Why do we get rid of the tax credit for young families after the quasi end of the pandemic? Because people actually survived as a result of that benefit, okay? They understand what gets us to a bridge, what brings us together, what is that common support? And therefore, they could never, ever embrace it because they can only embrace fear and they can only embrace threats because that's what's so effective for their success.
Well, Trump is like DeSantis in that he's not a libertarian. The one bit of intelligent political wisdom he tried to give the Republican Party is stop trying to smash Social Security, Medicare. Like you've lost that argument. They've been around for several decades. People like it. Our people like it. We have a base of a lot of old people, a lot of old white people. They like Social Security, Medicare. A lot of the privatizers and some of them who still remain in the House Republican conference will still say, well, we're not talking about the current seniors. We're talking about future retirees. So we'll protect the benefits of people who are already 7 years old. We got to fix things down the line. And everybody sees right through that and recognizes they're trying to change the fundamental nature of the program, and they lose that argument every time. They've always lost that argument when it comes to a head. Trump has wisely told Republicans, stop trying to fight a losing argument. Fight it somewhere else. Trump might still win the day within the Republican Party there. You're not seeing Kevin McCarthy eagerly taking that part of the budget battle on. He's being very hesitant about it, but you also have this Republican Study Committee, which makes up about three quarters of the Republican conference in the House, and they're formal budget proposal includes Social Security privatization as well as other benefit cuts. So it's an internal debate within the Republican Party that they have not resolved. It weakens their position as they threaten Biden with, hey, maybe we won't raise the debt limit. Maybe we'll risk the global economy. But for what exactly? They haven't even put forth what their proposal is as a collective party. And because they're in the middle of working that out internally, and Trump's statement is evidence that they haven't totally figured it out yet.
All right, so Lincoln, we only have a few minutes left for this half hour, but I keep thinking, so how do we turn every Republican into Santos and an attack on Medicare and Social Security? Can we create the composite human being? And the composite human being is this is your GOP. Nothing about them is true. Everything about them is a lie. And they want to attack the one thing that you actually know that, if we are living longer, of course, as a result of the pandemic, we're seeing actually the age decline when it comes to Americans in this country. But if you actually care about those things, then you know what? You just can't vote for them because they'll just cut you off at the knees. They're going to lie to you and they're going to take away anything that you had in the way of stability going forward. I almost feel like the Democrats don't know how to do the fight, but the Republicans effectively know how to sort of diffuse the conversation or have us talk about Chinese communists as opposed to what they're actually doing, which is really harming our future.
Well, one thing you have to do is you have to make the fight loudly and you have to make it early. This is not a last 2 weeks of the campaign kind of thing, right? Because whoever emerges as the Republican nominee in 2024, if they have half a brain in their head, in the case of some of them, not much more than that, they're going to know that they can't campaign on touching Social Security or Medicare. The House Republican Caucus will play around with that idea. And the Democrats have to begin hitting hard now, because the point of Kevin McCarthy's gamesmanship, there is no policy point here. The point is to make Joe Biden look bad,
yes,
right? And what McCarthy is willing to tank the economy so that he can have that fancy office and make Joe Biden look bad. But if he does this, this will backfire. This will be very bad for McCarthy. But we can prevent this from happening. But you got to hit hard. You got to do it early. and you got to stay on it. And the other thing I just want to say about DeSantis and Trump, because they are not from the libertarian wing, as Bill has pointed out. And that's what makes the kind of fascist model more relevant here. Because libertarianism is small government. Fascism is marrying the interest of the state to the interest of the authoritarian ruling party.
Right.
And that's what DeSantis has done in Florida, in a quieter, less dynamic, less charismatic, and more rational way than Trump tried to do as president.
Small government doesn't ban books. Small government doesn't deny you the right to take AP African-American history. Small government doesn't attack trans. I mean, they don't want to bother. I mean, let's be honest. They want government completely out of your life. And I'm going to end this segment by just reminding Rick of something. And then I've always said that New Hampshire was an interesting libertarian state. Why? Because we didn't believe in big government or big church. Let me just remind you, that was what we didn't believe. This is the Monday edition of The Attitude with Arnie Arnison and producers Dave Scott and Stephanie Collins. It is our Rethink the Week. We'll be rejoined by Lincoln Mitchell.
Let's talk pardons,
Rick Newman,
and the president.
And Bill Scherr.
I'm criminal defense attorney Luke Ryan, and this is the Civil Liberties Minute with ACLU attorney Bill Newman.
On December 30th, President Biden issued 6 pardons, one to a woman who was the victim of relentless physical abuse, but who at trial was prevented from introducing evidence of battered women's syndrome, and 5 to men who had committed federal drug offenses. All 6 completed their sentences decades ago, and all have lived long, productive, law-abiding lives. Some background. The Constitution grants the president the power to grant pardons, commutations, and reprieves. A pardon expunges the crime, as if it never happened. A commutation leaves a conviction in place but reduces the sentence. Commutations and pardons both come under the heading clemency. President Coolidge, for example, granted clemency some 1,700 times, FDR almost 4,000, Truman over 2,000. In contrast, the second President Bush, in his 2 terms, issued only 200, and the first President Bush, in his 1 term, 77. President Obama granted clemency over 1,900 times, mostly commutations to persons serving draconian sentences for nonviolent drug offenses. Hopefully, President Biden's recent pardons, including earlier pardons for marijuana offenses, indicate that going forward, this president will emulate President Obama's policy that combined compassion with common sense.
The Civil Liberties Minute is made possible by the ACLU because, as the criminal legal system proves every day, freedom can't protect itself.
When it's 2019, but it feels like 1933. When your eyes are open, when you know the history. When your parents lived through things that looked so much like this. All the indications impossible to miss. When you've sought for your whole life to make the earth a better place. And you once again see the rising of the master race. When you know that they are coming, when they announced it in advance. When you know for many people this will be their last chance. Then you may ask the question, what can one person do when the time to act is now? And now it's up to you. When it's 2019, but it feels like 1933. When indefinite detention is the new reality. For so many children to whom you did not give birth. When you see they're just as precious as every other child on earth. When they're opening the camps, not used since the war. Where families were imprisoned decades before. When Kristallnacht is coming, they announced it on the news. When the writing's on the wall, when you can see the fuse. Then you may ask the question, what can one person do when the time to act is now? And now it's up to you. When it's 2019, but it feels like 1933. When you know rallies are not helping and silence is complicity. When you know where the kids are kept, locked inside their cells. When you see approaching the future this foretells. When they're coming for your neighbors. When they've even said what day they plan to put them all in buses and take them away. When you know where they keep the buses. You've been to the parking lot. Perhaps a whole lot of petrol bombs is the best move that you got. Then you may ask the question, what can one person do when the time to act is now? And now it's up to you. When it's 2019,
it's 2019, but it feels like 1933.
Welcome back to part two of the Monday edition of The Attitude with Arnie Arneson, our producers Dave Scott and Stephanie Collins. It is also affectionately known as our Rethink the Week. We are rejoined by Rick Newman, a former state representative and Portsmouth City Councilor. He's currently a lobbyist on behalf of both local and national companies. Bill Scherr is an American pundit and liberal political analyst. He's a contributor to The Washington Monthly and co-hosts a show called The DMZ, an online TV show with conservative pundit Matt Lewis. Lincoln Mitchell teaches in the School of International Public Affairs at Columbia. He's a frequent contributor to CNN Opinion, the San Francisco Examiner, and Brussels Morning. I've always been aware of this, but my daughter married a young man from Shanghai. So now part of China is part of my life because we have this little baby that is half Chinese and half American. So now I am more aware of the anti-Asian, anti-China animus because it's now in my family and I worry about the future of my daughter. So I saw an article at the American Prospect. It was looking at a book, but the title was what intrigued me. Can China and America live and let live? Detente with the Chinese regime had many downsides. Open conflict might be much worse. And again, the reason I want to talk about this is, remember, just in the first half hour of the show, I was talking about the fact that the Heritage Foundation had put out this article at the Daily Signal entitled Chinese Communist Party Targets American Kids by Infiltrating K-12 Schools. So I want to sort of bookend this by what I had said in the first half hour with that statement in the second. And I kind of keep thinking about, so how do we have a relationship with China? And how does that relationship not warp or morph into something that is so incredibly antagonistic? And is that the only way we can be successful? I'm number one, you're number two. I win, you lose. It's my manufacturing, it's not your manufacturing. I just feel like with the climate crisis, with the pandemic, with all the things that we're facing, this is such a waste of energy and time because we in so many ways are on this tiny planet together. And what we are facing is something we both face. But the fight doesn't actually achieve anything.
The people who make up the current Trump party are similar to the people who were Democrats in the 1860s. They've got to hate somebody. They always have to hate somebody. There has to be an enemy. And I haven't read it recently, but when I was looking some materials about birthright citizenship, I was struck by the fact that President Andrew Johnson, actually speaking against birthright citizenship, said, if we allow birthright citizenship, we will one day have Chinese and Romas as citizens of the United States. This is a quote of a president of the United States that goes back to 1866 or something. That group of people in this country, that group of politic in this country, have been hating the Chinese for 150 years or more. They've got to have an enemy. So this is the only way they survive. And everything that we've talked about so far, whether it's Social Security, Medicare, race theory, et cetera, they do not have a solution or an answer to any of those problems. They have nothing to offer except fear and hate. Now this China thing, this is their enemy of the day. Well, China will be our enemy. The communists will be our enemy. And that's how we gin up our base to get our voters to the polls.
So Bill, is there also the reason to focus on China is that you can't focus on Russia and Putin because of the relationship of the GOP and Donald Trump with Putin, number one. And number two, I don't know if you know this, but we do a show every week with Scott Braddock. He is the editor of the Quorum Report. So we focus on Houston, on Texas. Okay, we do that. And Scott gave us a story on Friday. And the story was there is a bill in Texas to ban Chinese citizens and their government from buying land in Texas. They actually have a bill that they've introduced. Of course, I said it can't be just China. And the good news is if you actually read into it, that was the headline. And it turns out that they're also banning North Koreans and Russians, and I think Iranians from buying it. But notice the lead was we were not going to allow anyone Chinese or the Chinese government from buying land in Texas. That to me is just like, what the hell are they doing?
As I think you got at, you know, the Trumpian conservatism, Tucker Carlson conservatism is viscerally anti-China, but very warm towards Russia. It is not about, you know, Reagan era conservatism, which was anti-communist broadly. You know, they're picking and choosing the dictators that they want to cozy up with and the ones that they don't like. And what's sort of weird about Trump is that you can't even fully put a racial lens on him because Trump wants to be buddy-buddy with North Korea. So it's really hard to get your mind around what is the driving impulse of it is. But they certainly play upon a lot of racial fears when it comes to their rhetoric regarding China. He's even been in, Trump's been blatantly racist towards Mitch McConnell's wife,
yes.
Who was Chinese. I mean, that's how far that he takes it. But also keep in mind that Democrats have, while being less racist about it, still have a lot of sharp elbows towards China too. And Biden's foreign policy has been partly about trying to bring manufacturing back to America to some degree. And both parties have a history of talking very tough about China when they run for office, but being less so when they get into office, because at the end of the day, we're economically intertwined with them. It's a very vexing problem because China is, we talk about fascism, China is a fascist state. They do many illiberal things, perhaps even murderous things that you don't want to look away from, but we are economically intertwined with them. There's no putting that toothpaste back in the tube. So I would say Biden is probably walking the line as good as you can walk it, bringing back some manufacturing without completely upending the economic relationship. Whereas I think on the Republican side, there's a far more crude, ill-thought-out approach that's really about whipping up a lot of anti-Chinese sentiment without a lot of forethought about how the relationship's going to really be going forward.
Speaking of the government and our approach to how we sort of look at how effective government is, there was an article at Salon.com. No, actually, I believe it was the Washington Monthly. Jim Jordan's Reckless New Committee. The MAGA congressman chairs the new House Committee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government and is vowing to use it to probe open federal investigations. So, you know what I love about the Republican Party is that they embrace as if they're going to attack something that they do, Lincoln, because they weaponized the government when Donald Trump was president of the United States. There is no question that that's what they did. And that's what the attorney general did. And I just think it's just so amazing to me that because of the weaponization by Donald Trump and what they did, that they then turn around and they're creating this new committee. And of course, they're going to suddenly look at Joe Biden and say, oh my God, how did you weaponize government? Because actually what they wanted to do was say that actions have consequences. And isn't government responsible for looking at the illegal, unjust actions and saying there should be consequences? But if a consequence has to have a Republican face in front of it, then it must be a way of weaponizing the federal government. I mean, it becomes so confusing for the American people as to what's real and what's Memorex.
It would be very hard to determine who is the most morally despicable member of the House of Representatives. There are some strong candidates for that. Marjorie Taylor Greene, Matt Gaetz, Paul Gosar. But Jim Jordan might just win. And the tiebreaker would be his tenure as an assistant wrestling coach. The reason I say that is because this committee, it's for the MAGA peanut gallery. To say it has nothing to do with governance is an understatement. It's almost insultingly stupid. But it has nothing to do with governance. What it has to do is putting fuel on the constant fires of imagined scandals that the four of us don't even know about, that is being talked on like Newsmax and weird Q places now that will migrate over to Tucker Carlson and then poke their ugly heads up at the Washington Times and the New York Post and then move on and then Fox News and then et cetera, et cetera. But what they are saying, the weaponization to which they are referring is the Biden administration and the Democrats when they were controlling Congress having the audacity to probe the criminality of the Trump administration. So this is part of the larger effort to cover up that criminality, which isn't just Donald Trump. It's all of them as well, because they were complicit in this. But one last thing here, that you can't have a discussion about this and then on the other side turn around and say the Republican Party is done with Donald Trump. If you look at the Republicans in the House of Representatives, this is a real power base for Trump. And to say he has no chance of winning the nomination when the Republican Party in the House, and again, any Republican strategist, maybe even Kevin McCarthy is smart enough to figure this out, knows that this is bad politics. This is part of a strategy that will end with Hakeem Jeffries having the speaker's gavel in his hand in 2 years. And maybe Kevin McCarthy will be happy about that after the, let's put this politely, nightmare for him that these next 2 years are going to be.
I'm going to disagree with a little bit about what Lincoln said, because I don't think this only benefits Trump. This benefits DeSantis, it benefits the Republican Party. Anything that will taint Joe Biden, anything that will suggest that government is coming after me. What did Senator Grassley say about the IRS? That the IRS was going to come into your home and with weapons. I mean, when you have Grassley saying things that are just so over the top, you're kind of like going crazy. They are doing this because it'll be run on Fox News 24/7, because that's what they will do. And the problem then becomes, my question is, knowing the agenda of this committee, knowing that this has got nothing to do with what's real, do you let it just play out? Or does it get picked up by MSNBC? Does it get picked up by CNN? Does it get responded to on NPR? And just by responding to it elevates the erosion of faith in government. And that's my biggest fear. It's not what they're going to do. It's how do we talk about it, knowing what Lincoln just said?
We have to talk about it, and we have to aggressively push back on it. I think over the years, Democrats have made a big mistake in saying, well, that's such a crazy statement, we're not even going to respond to it. I'm not going to dignify that with an answer. And then that attitude has allowed some of those crazy statements and some of those things that don't warrant an answer to drip, drip, drip into the mainstream in the sense that people actually believe it. So you got people now saying, see, Joe Biden stole documents too, and he was selling them. And why are they saying that? Because they figure that Donald Trump probably really was doing that. He really did steal the documents, and he really did refuse to give them back. But they're trying to make it an equalization between what Trump did and what they've discovered documents in Joe Biden's possession or Mike Pence. And all of that goes to the projection. They are great projectors. So weaponizing government, weaponizing the courts, is done to cover up their own crimes. And we can't just sit there and say, we're not going to respond to it. We have to point that out every time. People are just going to say, well, if they're not responding to it, so it must be true.
Here's my dilemma. Because the Republicans still do control Congress, and because they're going to use it as this weapon, as we just heard, and since they have no policy agenda, and what they want to do is they want to undermine government, undermine Biden, undermine policy, because they don't have a policy agenda. And if we do what Rick says, which is respond to them over and over again, when do we get to talk about what it is that we actually want to do? What's the split screen? How do we have this conversation? Because unfortunately, you know the old adage about the media, if it bleeds, it leads. So what they are doing, they know, is anger, it's frustration, it's fear, it's sexy, it sells. And they know that that is something that people hold on to, and positive policy or the attempt to sort of accomplish something that just never seems to seep in. You know, it's like government does nothing for me, but that's bull, because that's the road you ride on. That's the clean water that you get out of your tap. That's the stable electricity that you get. People don't realize that is freaking government. So therefore, they're going to buy that government isn't a success strategy. And what they're going to do is then embrace what Jim Jordan is going to do, whether it's real or not.
Well, there's always a challenge for Democrats, because often when you pass a government policy designed to help people, it takes time for it to really kick in. The benefits don't automatically materialize, and so it's hard to run on your accomplishments. I'm a bit hopeful in this case, because Democrats did have 2 years to bank some accomplishments. And Even though it was a rough road with inflation, it does seem like inflation is easing. We don't know if we're going to have the quote-unquote soft landing, or if we're going to tip over into recession or not. That's not totally in Biden's hands. We got to hope the Fed has a good soft touch. But we seem to be on an okay trajectory right now economically. And Biden is able to say, here's what we did. We did pandemic relief to get us through the worst of it. We did invest in manufacturing. We did do what we can to reduce the deficit. Deficit is lower than it was when he came in. Obviously, it was very bad because of the pandemic relief that happened before him. But nevertheless, there are things that he can run on as it stands, so long as the economic numbers continue to be agreeable. And if the Republican response is, just being disruptive for disruptive's sake, you know, that has not been a good strategy for them in the past. When they tried to play that game with Obama, that did not lead to Obama's defeat. When they tried it again after Obama won, they recovered. You know, they did have a good midterm in 2014 and 2016, obviously Trump won. But in 2013, when they had the shutdown, their numbers were in the tank because they were being so ridiculous. So they had to stop doing that. They had to stop doing shutdowns to recover, which is what, you know, John Boehner finally wrested some control over the rest of his party. If McCarthy repeats the mistakes of the past, I don't think that puts them in a very good position for 2024.
I go back to Obama and it seems like a century ago, Lincoln. It just seems like so long ago. And the reason I even think about that is I'm wondering about the success that social media and Twitter and Facebook had, if their current footprint and their current sort of abuse of, I think, of knowledge in the process were there back when Obama was president of the United States, because I think everything has gotten so much more toxic now that we're allowing, they're allowing Donald Trump back on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, and they're basically saying, well, things have passed. You know, he's not about to turn us into a civil war. And I'm thinking, really, what based on what information? And I'm just looking at the toxicity of the environment that we're in, given the social media. Then I look at the toxicity that is going to be the whole raison d'etre of the Republicans in Congress. Then I'm looking at people still leery and exhausted from the pandemic, which is not over. And then I'm looking at the cost of eggs at $7 and, you know, what's going to happen with inflation. And I am just trying to figure out how the success of the 2 years of Joe Biden even gets a minute of attention when all of this seems to be synergistic in a very, very negative way.
If the Obama administration feels like a century ago, then the Obama campaign, that window from, I don't know, December of 2007 to January of 2009 seems like two centuries ago. That was the high point of hope in American project, and indeed, rightly or wrongly, the progressive American project of the last half century or more. I can't fathom how we're going to get back to that. And part of that is the toxicity, as you say, of the social media environment, but that's also a synergistic relationship with a political force that has given up on winning a majority of the American votes and is simply going to exploit quirks of the constitutional system to be competitive in presidential elections, hold the Senate when they can, and every now and then get control of the House. That's their strategy. And that's a very, very difficult environment. So I don't think there is a way back. Now, with regards to Biden, that doesn't mean he can't win an election. And of course, having a horse race conversation 2 years out is, you know, strange, right? We don't know what his health will be. We don't know what we'll be talking about. We don't know who his opponent will be. Nonetheless, we saw that in 2020, let me backtrack. We've had the same presidential election with the exception of 2008 and 12 every time this century. And the same, and this election we had last November was essentially the same one we had 2 years ago. The margins here are so narrow, right, that it almost comes down to rounding error. Who wins in the state of Ohio, not Ohio, in Wisconsin, in Georgia, in Pennsylvania, Georgia, the states that really flip the national election. So can Biden get that message across? He gets it. He doesn't need to get it across to 80% of the population because half of that 80% is with him no matter what, and more or less half is against him no matter what. On the margins, can he get it across? He got it across in 2020. In a different political context, he got the message across that what we are doing now is not working and it is disastrous. And he was able to communicate that. So can he do that again this time? Sure. Is it a given that he's going to be able to? Absolutely not. Will a Biden election stop the slow disintegration of the cohesion of the American state and the slow breakdown of American democracy? I don't think it's done it yet. I don't think a second Biden term will accomplish it either.
I keep thinking about who do we want to speak to in 2024 that will accomplish the task so that a Republican does not win. And I'm looking at people under the age of 40. I'm looking at women, especially in light of the Dobbs decision. I'm looking at young people who are concerned about, you know, the climate crisis, who are concerned about their jobs, who are concerned about inflation because they haven't even earned a living yet. I think 80% of people under the age of 40 don't really want Joe Biden to run again. my question is, how do you have Joe Biden run again, but then convince all these young people, I want them passionate because we need them. I want them to believe in a dynamic future. I want them to think that the bench isn't a bunch of old white men, you know? And again, I keep going back to Obama seems like an aberration, and both Donald Trump and Joe Biden seem like sort of the more typical choices that we give people. I am just trying to think about whether Biden does something because he cares more about the success of the country than whether he should run again. Is it wrong for me to think that maybe he realizes his limits and that he doesn't want his limitation to be the limitation of the Democratic Party? Or is it just easier to reelect?
Well, I hope you're right. I'm a Biden supporter, but I hope he does not run. And I feel like there is a real possibility that he will not, despite what people may think today. It would be an incredible thing for him to do, to walk away from running for reelection for the sake of the country. And I think the Democrats need, you know, someone who isn't in their 70s or 80s to run for president. We've got to have to do just what you said, to continue to inspire younger people to come out and vote. Now, that said, if he does run, I think at the end of the day, people will vote for him because of who I suspect will be the alternative to him. And whether it's if right now it looks like it's either DeSantis or Trump. And while I think DeSantis is more dangerous in terms of electability, if I had to put it in a mayonnaise jar on Funkenwagnall's porch today, my prediction would be that it is most likely Trump will be the Republican nominee again. So the alternative will turn out that vote, but it would be much better for the country. And I think Biden knows this. He could leave office with one of the most successful presidencies in history, with all of the things he accomplished legislatively, and walk away and let somebody younger come in and inspire the country to move forward.
I've been watching Joe Manchin, and Joe Manchin now seems to be toying with a lot of interesting ideas that he's floating. Leaving the Democratic Party, maybe running for president as an independent. And I'm looking at all this, and as I'm looking at, you know, whether we're going to anoint Trump again or whether Manchin does something like that, that's where I get even more concerned about Joe Biden running again in 2024, because I want someone who is so incredibly inspiring and storytelling and sort of can connect with voters and understands, whether it's in a rural Rust Belt or whether it's in California, how to have a conversation. I don't see Joe doing it. And I see almost like the Republicans are begging Manchin to run as an independent because they think that's going to be the setup that will give them exactly what they want. The way Ross Perot was to Bill Clinton, Manchin would be to Joe Biden.
It's always dangerous to assume people aren't stupid, but I don't think Manchin is that stupid. I mean, running third party is generally a losing proposition. I don't think it's the way he wants to go out. And probably if Biden runs again, that's a disincentive for Manchin to do that, because Biden's sort of Manchin's kind of Democrat. He's more of a moderate Democrat. If Biden steps out and a more left-wing person got the nomination, then maybe a centrist independent is more inclined to run. So I think Manchin's probably queuing himself up to run for re-election again or retire, although he likes to obviously keep us in suspense. Right now, the Democrats have done a very good job at uniting left and center. And so long as they can keep doing that, you can keep Trump and DeSantis at bay. If Biden steps out, could someone else potentially play that same role? Sure, but it's not a given. And that's the challenge for any Democrat to be able to replicate going forward.
Lincoln, because Donald Trump is going to be in New Hampshire, we're taping on Friday morning on Saturday. And what we know is that he's going to be speaking to the Republicans, and that DeSantis, while he may not be there, is going to be setting up a table collecting signatures. So what I am really hoping, and that I think is an asset for Biden or any Democrat, is to constantly enhance the stature of Ron DeSantis. Because if anything is going to create this incredible fight between Trump and DeSantis, I mean, the question will be, so how far extreme will they get? How insane will they get in order to sort of appeal to whatever the base is? And in some ways, by almost aiding and abetting that fight, I think it provides an opportunity, whether it's Biden or another Democrat, to basically say, so you want to be in that pigsty? or do you want to be somewhere else? And I think that that ultimately is my goal. And I'm hoping to sort of see that happening on Saturday night as it starts.
Joe Biden is running for president. Joe Manchin isn't. And you are right. A competitive Republican primary, which forces all of them to out-MAGA and outright wing them each other, will cede the center to the Democrats. That's how Biden won the last time, and that's how he can win again.
Rick Newman is a former New Hampshire state representative. He currently lobbies on behalf of both the local and national companies. Bill Scherr is an American pundit and liberal political analyst. He's a contributor at the Washington Monthly. And Lincoln Mitchell teaches at the School of International and Public Affairs at Columbia and is a contributor to CNN Opinion, San Francisco Examiner, and Brussels Morning. Thank you, gentlemen. And by next week when we talk, I'll tell you what happened at the New Hampshire GOP event on Saturday night. I'm going to be there with popcorn. Anyway, this is the Monday edition of The Attitude with Arnie Arneson and producers Dave Scott and Stephanie Collins. We will schmooze tomorrow, everyone. Ciao. You may-